KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. The last time my guest, Academy Award winner Dustin Lance Black, was here, he was writing Under the Banner of Heaven as a screenplay. It has now seen the light of day on television instead, and we're much better off with this terrific adaptation of John Krakauer's 2003 book. First of all, Lance, I can't tell you how happy I am to have you back. Thank you for coming back and do the show again.
It's my pleasure. Are you kidding me? It's been too long.
It's been way too long, but I guess I find myself thinking, interestingly, as I'm watching this and rereading the book, just how this thing that you do that's about the way people toggle from one life to another, and be it in this or the way you worked, certainly in Milk, where you get to see sort of those people figuring out their own real lives and trying to make themselves part of an institution. And then watching the character played by Andrew Garfield here try to navigate these two worlds of being in his faith, but also, as they used to say in the Old Testament, in it, but not of it, in the real world, and solving this murder. And I wonder if that's one of the things about this material that appealed to you. It is about people trying to sort of toggle back and forth between their personal lives and what the world is demanding of them.
Yes. I mean, I think that and believe that what is personal often, if not always in some form, becomes political, becomes legal. The political and legal realms are based on personal struggle and trying to figure out what rules might make life more livable, hopefully. And so I often write things about people who are trapped between their personal life and the law. And certainly this show is that. And frankly, that part of this show started in a personal way with me as a kid who grew up in the faith, grew up in the church, and for the most part was very happy to have been a part of the faith, found it supportive and warm, and in fact, life-saving at one point in our lives. But at a certain point, violence entered our home, violence brought in by a stepfather, and it was life-threatening. And yet the church asked us not to turn to the law, to turn to the church, to not expose our familial problems in that way, as they say, to trust our priesthood holder. And in fact, my mother was told that the real problem was she hadn't built a home suitable to our priesthood holder. So of course, cut to 2003, and I read this book by John Krakauer and find out that my experience was not unique, not by a long shot. And in fact, John was asking questions that I had wondered the answers to for a very long time and asking questions I never even thought to ask, mainly because in my childhood faith, we're taught not to ask questions, but that's bad. So yes, I needed to get to the bottom of this divide between the personal and the political and the law. And I thought Jebediah Pyrie was the investigator to do that, a devout Mormon who has to ask questions, even though his faith says not to, in order to try and win justice for this young mother and her 15-month-old daughter who were killed.
But also, too, that these three poles you're talking about, so often, too, you go back to the emotional aspect of history and how people who are fighting these traditions or fighting a tradition that shouldn't be sacrosanct, that shouldn't be protected, what their emotional investment was to that tradition. The expanse of time here gives you a real chance to do that in this miniseries, doesn't it?
I certainly couldn't have done it in a feature film. and I know that for a fact because I tried for years. I mean, I think when we first talked about this, I was starting out on the journey and it would be a good 3 years at least of just failing. I mean, and it was painful and I couldn't figure it out. And the scripts were hundreds of pages long and no one was going to make a drama of that length. I needed this space to be able to help folks understand just how personal the legal and the political are, to understand that this journey from unquestioned devout faith that this investigator takes to questioning, to finally having to find comfort in doubt, which I find to be a much more honest place, but that the Mormon church rejects that. And so it was going to take a lot of room to do it right.
I mean, as you're talking, I was just thinking about the first 2 hours of the show are just posing questions. To have 2 hours of just, wait, what's going on here? And Jake trying to figure out, well, who am I now? Because that's happening actually in real time in this, him trying to figure out who he is now, just because he has had the comfort of this institution as bedrock.
Yes. And unquestioned. He's inspired by a lot of conversations I had with actual law enforcement officers in Utah, some who were involved with the case. I asked them, I said, what was it like when you started asking tough questions? That's something we're trained not to do. We were trained as young Mormons to put our questions on a shelf, to doubt our doubts. And I would say to a one, they said it was very challenging because I was asking things that made it increasingly difficult to believe in my faith. And in Utah, in that valley in particular, if you lose your faith, that doesn't just mean you lose your ward, which is a congregation. You likely also lose your marriage, your family, your community, your job. I mean, it really puts you outside of that very warm world, warm when you're in the middle of it, very cold when you're in the outside.
This starts off, this look at this incredible murder case, with Jake going to the crime scene and just being overcome, which is not something we're used to seeing in dramas about murders or procedurals, that there's a detachment. This is, well, the third one of these I've seen today, or isn't this a shame? But just to see, because it's an assault both on him as a person, but also as a person of faith. And again, you don't even tell us that early on. We have to get a couple hours in to see how much he's internalized that and why this hits him so hard at the very beginning.
You know, one of the things was important to me was to keep Jeb honest to the experience of being a Mormon man and a priesthood holder in the church. And people might be surprised to find out that in my experience and those I've spoken with, the Mormon men are taught to show emotion, to keep their heart open, to push down the negatives of masculinity. You know, you see it when you listen to some of the prophets and higher ups in the church speak. There is a gentleness, almost a femininity, and certainly an access to emotion, and that's encouraged. I actually think that's one of the great things about the church. So I could not have create a police officer who was just hard bitten and had seen it all and wasn't going to act emotionally. First of all, this series is inspired by true events. These murders happened. An investigator walked into that scene, and we worked diligently to keep things as true and real and honest as possible. So the scene looked a lot like what you saw in the show. And if I'm going to send an investigator from a small town in the Utah Valley who likely has never seen anything like this into that scene, he had best react with some emotion, which is unique to an investigation show like this.
By the way, my guest was unfailingly polite, is Academy Award winner Dustin Lance Black. I love saying that. His newest venture as a dramatist is the adaptation of John Krakauer's terrific book, Under the Banner of Heaven. And I think what's so interesting about this too, Lance, is that it's also this thing that you tend to do is about having characters who are at a crack in history, when the world is about to change. And that fact that in historical term, the world is changing under their feet. And then that's something you're attracted to too. So the idea for you being able to combine this true crime story with this character who's kind of an anachronism, some of these sort of things that are sort of sub-fissures in Krakauer's book, which you really sort of make dramatic meat out of them here.
I'll tell you what I don't like. I don't particularly like biopics and true stories that are simply nostalgic. I find them to be a waste of energy and time. And we have so many critical issues going on in the world at any given moment, but particularly right now. I mean, listen, the intersection of Proposition 8 and milk, it was clear that that story from history was entering into the present tense in a way that hopefully would affect the future. That's always my hope. I'm not happy to say that this series is entering into the present tense at an incredibly critical time and a meaningful time. The crime that's being investigated, at the center of it is a family that was highly esteemed, that hit hard times, and the boys, the brothers in the family, started taking steps back towards fundamentalist documents to try and find certainty, to try and regain their footing. So first they turned back to the U.S. Constitution and strict and originalist interpretations of it. Does that sound familiar?
Vaguely.
That's where we are in the world. The world, we have not had an easy, you know, past many years. And the world is looking for sure footing. And unfortunately, many are doing what seems to be innate, which is turning back to originalist documents to try and find safety. Whether that's the Constitution or the Bible or even the Book of Mormon, this show is a cautionary tale that says, beware of following rules written by men thousands of years ago. They're not here. They don't know as much as we do now. We know better now, far better now than our forefathers did, no matter how well-meaning they were. We know better, so we must do better. That is what lies at the heart of the story of this show, that turned back to fundamentalist documents, old, dusty rules written by men who do not understand where our feet are now. That turn can be dangerous, it can be brutal, and it can lead to bloodshed. And that's not hyperbole. A young woman and her 15-month-old daughter were slaughtered because of a turn back to fundamentalist documents. We do not need to see that on the world stage. I hope this show serves as a cautionary tale to the world right now, not to do so again.
So often in doing these kind of historical dramas, it's about the tensions of fighting these battles. But what's important to you is to knit these tensions of these historical moments into the lives of people as they're occurring. So it's not just the only thing that's consuming them, but making that part of the human drama of having to deal with this thing and also having to deal with the rest of your life.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. How does a story from the past crack open the future? How does it break something apart that needs to be broken? That's what I do. It doesn't always work. I'm not sure When We Rise did what I hoped it would do.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, you just, because these things do have to, in order to be effective, enter into the consciousness of the country or the world. And that's a tall order. So say Milk did that in ways I never anticipated and I may never see again. You know, When We Rise didn't find its audience in the same way. And thankfully, it seems Under the Banner of Heaven is. You know, you do all of this hard work and you put it out there and you still don't know if it's going to stick, if it's going to connect. We just do our best. But I'll tell you, the intention, whether it's successful or not, is to always find something that needs to be broken, something that needs to be cracked open, a part of the status quo that needs to be changed. And I do believe that you create these things and put them out into the world to create that good chaos, that good trouble, that cracks things open so that they can be reformed better. You know, so if a show like this gets someone to say, hey, you know what? Maybe I should think about the original U.S. Constitution a little bit differently, not as a holy document, but for what the founders intended it to be, an ever-changing document that learns as we learn and changes as we change.
Oh my gosh, see, this is what I think really, for me, is the crux of what you do. People who treat law as if it was handed down as scripture.
Yeah.
I mean, that for you is the fundamental question of drama that you do, isn't it?
I think that when we look to our forefathers and now some foremothers, finally, to the laws and the rules that they've created in the past, probably for the most part, they meant well. They thought it was an improvement. I mean, listen, the fact of the matter is calling being gay and mental illness was considered an improvement way back in the day because at least it wasn't the death penalty anymore. But we also know now that it's not a mental illness. So as we've learned more, as we know better, what do we do? We take the work, the hard work our forefathers and our foremothers did. We see what still applies, what still makes life more livable for the most people on the planet and in our country and in our communities. We keep those bits. and we throw out the trash. Listen, they didn't know. They didn't understand. It wasn't, you know, we understand so much more now than people did 2,000 years ago when they were scratching out the New Testament, or 200 years ago when, you know, Joseph Smith was working on the Book of Mormon. We know so much more than our forefathers did when they were writing the laws that would become our Constitution and the laws that have led up to today. We have to examine them. I do not think it's an insult to call yourself a cafeteria Christian or a cafeteria American. Take what's good, save it, protect it, and leave the dead stuff behind. Leave it behind.
That's a great place to take a break. I'm talking to my guest, Oscar winner and dad, Dustin Lance Black. His new project is Under the Banner of Heaven on FX. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Join Jacqueline Coley as she hosts a brand new podcast, Scene on Screen. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that define them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Scene on Screen is available now, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back. That passionate fellow at the other end of the microphone is Dustin Lance Black, a screenwriter extraordinaire. His new project for FX is Under the Banner of Heaven, the adaptation of John Krakauer's terrific investigative nonfiction work. What I was saying in the first half, though, is that your interest is also, too, blending history into the real fabric of quotidian life. You know, that you can't separate these seismic moments in history to what they do to people. And we get to see what's happening in Jeb's life before he finds out about this. But after, he still has to go home and try to keep family together and walk through the things that they do. I mean, for me, one of the most fascinating moments was him having to hurry the moment of evening prayer before he goes out on this case that's going to change his life. I mean, just in textual terms, the first 10 minutes of this piece is really fascinating. And I'm guessing that's one of the thrills of getting to do it as a television series rather than having to do this movie.
Yes. As a movie, to move through a loss of faith in 2 hours and tell the story of the Lafferty murders and share the pieces from LDS history that serve as clues to solving the crime. I mean, there wasn't time to do it right. I have personally experienced stepping out of the LDS faith, and I know many, many people who have. And it's not something that happens in an instant. And I love that you point out that first scene because I think it's very telling. You know, it was challenged a few times early on in drafts. Like, well, shouldn't he just get to the crime? Why does he got to do this thing? It seems like he's a bad investigator. And I said, well, no, what's important to someone like this is to be a good dad and a husband, a good quote unquote priesthood holder in his home before anything else. And so if he didn't do these things, I think other Mormons would be like, hey, buddy, what's most important here?
But that's even an idyllic moment. We're hearing Let's Hear It for the Boy from the Footloose soundtrack, which is also a piece of drama about questioning one's faith. So there's subtextual stuff there, too.
Yeah, that was not by accident. I did need to help land people in the period, which was 1984. And it might be a little cheeky that it's Let's Hear It for the Boys when we're deeply examining a brutally patriarchal faith in America.
Oh my gosh, but I mean, you align on these music pieces, but I just thought that, because again, it's also a piece of drama about questioning faith and about accepting articles of faith as natural law rather than asking questions about them. I mean, there's just sort of so much subtextual happening in the first 10 minutes of this, and there's so much also breathing room, which is not something I think with you a lot, just because you've had to work so fast, and you the thing you really try to keep lighted in your work is a sort of sense of idealism and almost aggressive optimism in these characters, there's a strong wind put to that, that sort of flame of optimism in this, isn't there?
I think Jeb is an optimistic character. And I think he's not going to lose that part of himself as he starts to question his faith. That's something that he's learned probably from Mormonism, to be hopeful, but to put work behind it. You know, Mormons were on a hunt for their quote-unquote Zion for a very long time, being chased from city to city across this country, and experiencing tremendous violence as they went. But they kept hope and they kept optimism, understanding it had to be attached to action. They were going to have to, you know, take a wagon train across the country to land in this valley. And even then there was hard work to be done. So it's in your bones as a Mormon to be optimistic, but to understand that that optimism and hope detached from action are just delayed disappointment, really. And that you have to attach action to it. And you see that with Pyrie. He wants his family to be strong, and he wants to protect them. And there's times in which he has to do that in this series. And he wants to keep them together, and he has to make some difficult choices later about how candid to be about his loss of faith in order to keep his family. And that's this show is not going to have the simplest, neatest of conclusions, but I hope it's deeply satisfying.
I mean, all that sort of tonal stuff is the kind of thing that really sort of like lets us know that there's a commitment to life that Jeb has, and that commitment will be also applied to his work. I mean, that's the sort of thing, because often too, you know, there's a cop who has a rotten personal life, but gosh darn it, he goes and he does the job. And this idea that, ideal rather, that sort of goes from his personal to his professional life, I thought was a really telling thing to show. And it's one of the great things that clearly you sort of were able to weave in from what Krakauer did in the book, but that you have to show a level of consistency. So to have that, you're having both your personal and professional lives unended by the information you're digging up. I really think that the first couple hours give us all that kind of foundational work.
It's a very unique circumstance, and it's partly why I wanted to create that investigative thread. It does not exist in the book. The book does tell the history of the Mormon Church that's pertinent to solving the story of this heinous crime. But it felt like an investigation when I was reading it.
Well, it's reportorial, really, is what it is. And it is about that the creation of the tale. But again, I was thinking about Pedro. Even in the first hour of When We Rise, we get to see where people live, what their houses are like, what food is like on the table. I mean, all these kinds of things that sort of tell us who a person is, that so often is elided in dramas about somebody with a professional stake. In Milk, I mean, if you go back to the Life and Times of Harvey Milk, that documentary is just sort of about this unswerving commitment to public life. The docudrama that you wrote isn't that at all. And what happens here is that same sort of thing too, that we don't get to see how people inhabit the walls away from where they do their jobs. There's something missing from that.
I think, listen, it's people call me naive and optimistic because of that, and it goes to having grown up, being raised by, yes, a Mormon mom who taught us we could do anything we set our mind to, but she demonstrated that in action. She was paralyzed from the chest down, polio, and raised three boys mostly on her own. And so we understood in our bones that anything was possible. That what people were telling us we weren't strong or smart or good or rich enough to do, well, BS. Yes, we can. Look at what my mom's doing. And so I think a part, probably something that lives in my work that isn't, I don't think about it much, which is humanize your characters, humanize your heroes and the quote unquote villains. I don't think about them in that way, because what I feel like I always want an audience to know is that could be you. You could do that. You could change the world. You could lead a rebellion. You could fight for equal rights and win. Or you could take a dark path and start leaning on fundamentalist documents that lead you the wrong direction, or turn to violence as a solution. This could be you. You got to pick which way you're going to go. And it's what I did in Milk. It's what I did in Pedro, When We Rise. It's often difficult to distinguish, at least early on in these pieces, who the hero and who the villain is. And that's by design, because I think that's honest. And I think that's more instructive. And I hope it's more hopeful.
There really is that point we have to ask ourselves, so who are the heroes and who are the villains here? Because offering that kind of historical purview on Mormonism, which we don't see very often, and we should say here too that faith has such a stronghold in Utah that there's a whole subset of dramatic product made just for Mormons. There are movies and television shows, and for a long time, sort of these kind of de facto secret recuts of studio films. And so for you to offer that purview, that examination of that world and what that history is without a judgment of it, and actually giving it real kind of this incredible narrative momentum as these tensions that led to the creation of LDS is really fascinating stuff for those of us who don't know about it to see.
We did a premiere of this show in Salt Lake City shortly after the premiere here in Hollywood.
What was that like?
It was... Well, the audience was filled with mainstream Mormons, with some fundamentalist Mormons, meaning they had more than one wife, with some, you know, radical Salt Lake City progressives, and just some rank and file Mormon folks and historians from the Mormon Church. And I have to say, I was ready for, you know, a brawl. I thought, boy, this is a terrifying design. And we screened the first two episodes, and there were many tears, and real people having to step out of the theater, particularly women, to catch their breath, to process it, and they'd step back in, and the conversations I had with them were so similar to what had been in my heart, you know, decades ago now when I stepped out of the church and read Krakauer's book. They were saying to me, I didn't know I needed to ask those questions. I didn't know it was the answers to those questions that would help free me, that would help me understand it wasn't my fault what happened to me as a member of the church. And oh, I'll get tearful thinking about it. And, you know, so in that way, I think it created a space where people could see what they valued about the faith and what they wanted to hold on to. It's not like it was going to create a mass exodus from the church, nor do I need it to. But in that way, it was beautiful to see people say, I now understand what's broken in this faith I love, and I'm going to put that aside because I understand it's continuing to cause me injury. And the Mormon Church, much like the founders of the U.S. Constitution, claim to this day that it is an ever-changing church, that it is not supposed to be calcified. And so I hope the church listens to these people, mostly women. I hope they see the tears, and I hope they understand it is time to be loyal to the words of their founders and to let the church change in the ways it needs to change again. Because I got to say, and this isn't specific just to the Mormon church, I think it's high time we stop teaching our little boys and our little girls to pray to a God who is a misogynist. I think it's time we say to our children, we're going to pray to a God who believes you are equally capable, regardless of the color of your skin, where you come from, your gender, or who you love. We know that that should be the case now. So we should start teaching that and leave behind this notion of a misogynist God. Our children deserve better.
I can't think of a better place to end than that. Lance, thank you so much for doing this. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Elvis, very much.
My guest is Dustin Lance Black. His newest project, and his creator, is the adaptation of John Krakauer's book, Under the Banner of Heaven for FX. Our production staff includes Katie Gilchrist. The show is edited and produced by Rebecca Mooney. To better days, everyone. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.